collective expertise, we will show you how to harness, control, and use your own skill set to achieve ultimate success and live the life you want. And now, please welcome your host.
Welcome to this week's Small Scales Podcast. This podcast is designed for small government contractors, service providers, and manufacturers as part of the government contractor ecosystem, connecting people, organizations, and resources. I am your host, Just Nate, and this week on the phone, I'm excited to say we've got the CEO, Mr. Matt Hastings from Alpherbrook. They're located out of Washington, D.C. area. They're kind of a innovative market intelligence firm. So, Matt, welcome.
Thanks, Nate. It's great to be here.
No, this is great. I know our CEO, Dennis Cater, he was on, found you guys on the web, I believe, and attended one of your demos, or you set up a demo with him, and he highly recommended we get you guys on the podcast, of one of these early podcasts, so I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, for sure. I would say it was meant to be then. Dennis and I sort of hit it off, and we had a very enjoyable conversation, and excited to be here and talk a little bit about, you know, what we're seeing and our business here at Alpherbrook. So thanks a lot for having us, and it's a great time. So,
well, yeah. So Matt, tell me I guess real quick. First of all, summarize kind of what Alpherbrook is, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a great first question to start with. I would say, as you said, of course, we're a market intelligence company. I think a great way to think about us is really a customer-focused company. So within a federal contracting environment, a lot of contractors, especially small businesses, are familiar and comfortable with the process of sort of finding RFPs and bidding them and pursuing them. What we recognized as a major gap or problem area in the federal contracting environment was that there's a disconnect oftentimes between the government and customer and the actual, you know, federal contractor that's bidding or, you know, pursuing specific contracts. So
say that in
Alpherbrook. Yeah, exactly.
A disconnect between the government and commercial entities.
Exactly. So, and we really started Alpherbrook to solve that problem, but a little bit different than how the BD databases or other solutions out there would go about it. We really put the customer first. We have a very customer-centric solution where we call it Voice of Government. That's the name of our solution. And what that means is all of the market intel we're getting is coming directly through live interviews, sort of like what we're doing here where we're having a conversation. We have conversations with the government end users, and not just anyone, the program managers, the deputy PMs, the technical leads, the people who are actually going to be on the evaluation panel, which surprises people sometimes, but we're talking with those people, extracting what their pain points are and their needs and sort of the information that doesn't always make it into a formalized, sanitized RFP package. We're extracting that and then delivering that to our clients in a very documented, sort of evidence-based way. We're different, we're unique, and we're really a solution that was developed based off of a need. Myself, you know, I was in, you know, a sales guy for, you know, a couple federal contractor companies and had always wanted a solution like this. And so it was sort of a natural transition that we would start this company and sort of, you know, build it out as we have.
So when did you build the organization? When was it founded?
Yeah, so Alpherbrook was, good question. Alpherbrook was founded in 2011, and you know, we've just grown from there. So we're coming up on our 10-year anniversary actually this July. So it's sort of an exciting time. I would say for the first few years we were doing a lot of surveying, a lot of experimenting, a little bit of advisory work, and then I would say the last 5 years we've gotten really clear about our focus around the voice of government and you know, have a very clear mission around helping government get better solutions. A big part of our effort is not just to help federal contractors bid more of the right deals, which means avoiding the wasteful deals. That's a big thing in federal contracting, the time management. So we help them a ton with that. But it's also, of course, helping them win deals. But then furthermore, we're helping government really get better solutions. I think what gets all of us out of bed and excited about working here at Alpherbrook is we're making real change in government because the information they share with us you know, oftentimes wouldn't get shared to the right bidders. And so by them sharing with us where they've got needs and pain points and struggles, it creates a loop where then they're getting really great value in the proposals that they're reviewing. So I think that's what truly gets us excited about the market that we're in.
Okay, so Matt, you know, our main listenership is really that smaller business. It might be somebody that's never done a government contract. It might be somebody that, like me, it's been in the field for 20 years. So we've got all aspects of the field. I've actually talked with another company that kind of does the same type of thing you do. But one of the questions you mentioned, the voice of the customer is kind of what you guys call it. Do you get a client like myself, or kind of walk me through the process? So would I come on as a client first, tell you, hey, I'm looking at contract XYZ project, project truck. And then do you go out and do the research on that? Or are you constantly doing research on lots of different contracts, kind of like a GovWin? And then whenever somebody comes up, you already have the information. How does that work?
Yeah. So, what I would say is that companies hire us on a subscription basis. We work with companies on sort of a minimum basis of a year, some much longer than that, of course. But so a lot of our clients are signing up and then using our research across multiple opportunities within their pipeline. We like to pride ourselves on being first to market and really only in market. So we're currently the only market intelligence company that we're aware of, and we do competitive intelligence, so we obviously try to do our own research as well. We're really the only company that we've seen or that has ever even done this, where we get all of our intel exclusively from government end users. So if a client comes to us, signs up on a subscription and chooses an opportunity for us to go research, which is sort of how it would work, they would choose the first topic. And they get, the way our research works is they get so many of these, topics that they can choose on a cycle basis. And so we're delivering everything through these digital reports where we're sort of storyboarding our conversation. And so oftentimes a client will sign up with us. 70% of our clients are small businesses. So I'm glad that you have a heavy small business audience here. We love small businesses. Some of my best experiences in personal growth development has been at small businesses. Obviously AlphaBrook is a small business. So a small business would sign up for us and immediately start choosing opportunities within their pipeline or key programs in government or even key executives that they have meetings with or that they want to start engaging with that they just need to learn more about, so that we have a process whereby they can submit that topic to us. And then we actually take that topic, and this is what we do that's unique. We take that topic, we build a report, but everything that goes into that report is output of these interviews we're having, where we're transcribing the verbal feedback we're getting, and then sort of in a very journalistic way, creating a storyboard within a report, almost as if you were to document this conversation we're having if someone was really interested in, doing research on this topic. And so we do that same thing. And that's unique to basically guarantee completion, which we do, and to guarantee intel directly from the decision makers on the government side, and then to transcribe it within a specific report. The other thing that we do that our clients really like is we're working on individual assignments with individual companies. So, the research we do is heavily customized and exclusive for each company that we're doing the research for. And I think that gives our clients a lot of comfort knowing that the intel they're getting through our solution truly does give them a competitive advantage, because they're getting, golden nuggets and details about the government programs and contracts in a verbalized way through these reports that wouldn't exist in the BD databases. You mentioned one of them. The BD databases are just pretty much scraping or pulling broader data from already available government databases. The difference between us and a BD database, we're going directly to the government decision makers, having real conversations, and then extracting the intel that our clients have specifically requested that we focus on through the topic that they gave us for research.
Now, are you guys funded at all by the government entity then? Or, I mean, because...
Oh, no. So, no.
I would just say cold calling sometimes, whether you are a BD guy for a company or I guess even your team, I would assume, can be met with some resistance sometimes too, depending on the program, I guess, or the contracting officer.
So the short answer to your question is no. So we don't take any money from the federal government. That's actually a big part of why we're successful, is that we differentiate ourselves from the federal contractor. We've also been doing this for almost a decade, so we have over 1 million program contacts within our own internal database that you know, creates a lot of economies of scale and allows us to be able to get a hold of people quicker. Another really important fact, though, is that as a company that's a third party, so we don't bid on any federal contracts, we've also relinquished the right for us to ever be a federal contractor. We've also forfeited the right to ever protest. So we've given the government some significant concessions, or made some significant concessions to make the public sector, these amazing public servants, feel more comfortable, which is important, right? Because in the federal market, there's, you know, it seems like every week, every day, you're hearing about new protests, and the government, you know, very risk averse. And I think the reason the government feels comfortable with us is that we've pretty much taken away a lot of those risk factors that they would have to, you know, seriously consider with a contractor before they communicate. So at this point, we have communication partnerships across all of the public sector. So that's all the major departments and agencies, both in defense, civilian. We even research into the IC, the intelligence community. We also research into all state and local, even the little quasi agencies that maybe would be totally new agency names to some of your audience. We research into those organizations. So really, anywhere within the public sector that your audience would have interest in, we would focus on that. And that's why the government communicates with us. There's a trust and sort of a cooperation that we've established, given sort of our unique positioning as a neutral or a third party.
Okay. And yeah, so one of the questions I typically ask everybody on here is what's the business model? And you kind of already jumped the gun on that one for me a little bit. You mentioned that you're a subscription-based. Kind of talk to us about how that works then. Do you have different subscriptions or just one price fits all or what?
Yeah, so it starts off as a one-year term subscription, and then if you're happy, it just continues onward. We have a 90% plus retention rate after year one. So one of the reasons we've grown pretty quickly is, of course, we're adding a lot of new customers, but frankly, you know, we keep a lot of our customers. That's one of the things you realize when you go into business is you start thinking about these words like churn and retention, and I think we do a great job of, you know, providing amazing intel that's customer sourced. That once our clients get that intel, they generally, you know, don't want to turn that off, because it is something unique that would be tough for most contractors to get with their internal BD team. Nothing against the internal BD team. It's just an internal BD person might be, you know, they might be negotiating teaming agreements, going to conferences or events, not so much with coronavirus in full effect, but maybe it's Zoom events. I've seen some of those. but once things get back to normal, hopefully sooner rather than later, BD people are out there meeting people. They're trying to get, you know, teammates established and things like that. What separates us is just our direct access to the customer. From a subscription standpoint, you know, the way our research works is we have different research plans. And I won't get into all the exact details at this very moment, but we've got different plans where depending on how much research you need on a quarterly cycle basis. So our clients basically have, you know, different cycles where they can use a certain amount of research, and they get so many topics to submit to us, you know, where then we're going to go take those topics, go interview the government, get the feedback, and then send back their customized report just to them. So the only real difference between the plans is, you know, how many of those topics you get, you know, on a per cycle basis. And we've got two or three different plans just depending on how much research the small businesses would need.
Okay.
As part of their, you know, BD process.
Yeah, and that makes sense. It's kind of, and those cycles are probably dependent upon, you probably see that those go up with the larger size of the company too, that's trying to get your services.
For sure. And, you know, we try never to pressure anyone. You know, we always tell people, if you're not sure, just start off on, you know, the plan one cycle, as we call it, and you can always ramp up. We like doing that because our solution sort of speaks for itself. We have a lot of customers that come to us where word of mouth. We've had small businesses be in a red team meeting, have two partners in a meeting, and they pull up our report and they put our report on the projector. And the other two companies say, oh my goodness, these are direct quotes from the program manager and the deputy PM. And like, these are people who are going to be, you know, really awarding this. Who is this? Well, who's Alphabrook? What's that? And then they'll tell them about us. And then guess what those companies do right after they leave the meeting?
Yeah, I bet they're just calling you.
They call us and they say, how do you guys do that? You know, tell us your process and how can we sign up? And so we get a lot of signups that way. So we have a big philosophy you know, let's give people going. If getting a company going on plan one, we've had large businesses start off on a plan one, and if that helps you get going, and then, you know, if you like it, you're going to ramp up really quickly and, you know, really invest in the solution even more. And so we, even for a lot of our sales demos, we come ready with a sample. Like, we do a lot of, I have a joke, you know, we're always doing research and sometimes we're getting paid for it. And I should probably stop telling that joke, Nate, but the point is, we try to give a lot in the sales process. We've recently, our team, we have an amazing marketing engine here, Sarah Coet, who leads our marketing team. She's always thinking of new ideas and doing amazing things. And we recently, just in the last month or two, have released two free reports, one for COVID-19, which was, we actually interviewed the government on things going on and how they're dealing with COVID-19. And we also did one on the GSA transitions from, you know, to beta.sam, or the SAM transitions, because as we're all aware, maybe too aware, you know, like FBO and FPDS and all these other sites are part of a transitional roadmap to the larger SAM website. So we did a whole free report on that. So we just want people to experience our solution, because our belief is, once they see our intel, once they see the government actually quoted for, you know, verbally with their name cited in the report, it's sort of, it's transformational. Because when you think about the deals in your pipeline, and for every deal in your pipeline having that type of unique government end user intel, you know, that really changes the way you make bid decisions once you know what the government's thinking for the deals you're bidding. We find a lot of people are bidding deals without ever even connecting with the government, or truly knowing what their pain points are. So then what they do is they just do their best to submit a compliant proposal. But I don't know, you could tell me your thought on this, Nate. I don't know that submitting compliant proposals is enough to win. I think you got to be compliant, but you really got to prove to the customer you understand their unique environment and their pain points.
Sure. And speaking, so a little bit about my background, I used to work for a very large prime contractor, government contractor, that used to design and build weapon systems. And I was a engineer at the time, but I ran lots of proposals from the engineering side. I gave them the technical input a lot. And so it is multiple things, right? You have to prove that you understand what their requirements are. But I've also been one on the other side, on the government side, where I was reviewing proposals, and I can tell you for a fact that it all depends on the customer, but I have the customers that I work for, the government entities that I work for, they were very adamant about, if it says 10 point Times New Roman and no more than 10 pages, anything. I've had some government entities that would say, just throw it out. I've also had some that said, oh, well, they submitted 12 pages, we said only 10 pages. We're going to read the first 10 pages and just cut it off there, the last two pages. If the meat of the thing was in the last two pages and you finally got around to your summary in the last two pages, they never read it. So, compliance with Section L and M is a huge, huge deal. So I've always told people that, you know, if when you go to write your proposal, if you don't do anything, make sure you read through that Section L and M multiple times, and then multiple times after you're done writing your proposal to make sure it matches. And then even have somebody else review against Section L and M to say, oh, well, wait a second. Is this really double space or is it single space, right? Because those types of things can put you out of the running. Kind of like the old adage of when they tell you to write in blue or black ink on a application for Taco Bell when you go to apply when you're in high school and you use pencil. If you can't even follow a simple direction like that, I'm not going to trust you with a cash drawer, right? So your application just goes straight in the trash. So it's kind of the same way. Well, that's the way the government teaches it or treats it.
Yeah, and I would agree with you wholeheartedly that being compliant is really important. And please, and I don't ever want to suggest that. I didn't mean to suggest or discount the importance of compliance. What I will say, though, is if 20 people bid and only 10 are compliant and 10 are disqualified, well, then what separates those 10 that are fully compliant? Our opinion is that what's going to separate, so 10 are fully compliant, what's going to separate them is who knows the customer best.
100%.
And so even if you're compliant but you don't win the deal, it doesn't matter. And so we're really focused on just helping our clients, you know, win deals. I think there's two things to think about, and people don't always think about it this way. If a company just bids 10 deals over a course of a period of time, let's just say a year, that could be not much at all for a larger company, or that could be a ton for a very small company. But how many of those deals do they bid where it's just the wrong deal, meaning they should have never even bid that deal? And a wrong deal would be a deal where the government's not even interested in your solution. So you might be able to do it, But straight up, the government's never going to pick you because, you know, they got their heart set on someone else, or they love the incumbent or whatever. So you just should have never bid the deal. It's the wrong deal. Then there's the right deal. There's actually deals that companies will bid, but they've got the wrong intel. So the customer could potentially be open to choosing you, but you don't have any intel, or you have hearsay intel because this contractor said this or that. And so you develop wind themes in your proposal based on what you suspect could be true, maybe through reading the RFP or whatever. And I think that that's really risky too. So we see people bid the right deals with the wrong intel because they don't know the customer. We also just see people bidding deals they should never bid. And what's great about the market intel we provide is that since it is coming directly from the evaluation panel, the program end users, you get to know really, really clearly upfront, very quickly, if you should bid the deal or not. And then if you decide to bid the deal, you're going to have some unique detail in there within the reports we're providing to help you really flesh out and sharpen those wind themes within your proposal. That's sort of what we pride ourselves on.
Oh yeah. When I was talking about compliance, that is obviously a big deal. However, bigger than that is how well do you know that customer, right? Because if you don't know the customer at all and you just talk to, say, a great product you have, if you don't relate that back to what they're needing, it's just going to go straight over the head. Because you got to remember, the people that are typically reading these proposals, they're not the PMs. They're not the engineers. It's going to be somebody that's a bean counter first, and then you might have a PM, but it might not be the PM that's going to be operating the program either. So how they're going to look at it, they're going to look at, oh, well, here's the requirements that we gave during the RFP, and if there's no cross-references, that's not going to read very well. So 100%, you know, what you guys are offering is that intelligence. And speaking from a BD guy myself, sure, I do a lot of going out and talking with people and teaming and putting teams together. And then you got to do NDAs, teaming arrangements, and all this other stuff. And then you got to figure out your PWIN. But I'll tell you, the number one thing that BD people have the problem with is find the time to do the appropriate research and intel that needs to be done. Now, that could be with the customer, because, you know, I've tried to call the customer and, you know, they're like, yeah, it says June of 2020, but last time we put anything out there was September of 2018, and that's all I can tell you. And I'm like, well, that does mean no good whatsoever. And it's June of 2020 here, Matt, and you can probably tell I'm speaking from experience here. That just happened to me like last week. Waiting for this thing to come out. Yeah. And when you finally do get a hold of somebody on the government side, from my perspective, and after calling four different people and having three of them not answer, one finally answered and said, oh, I'm no longer on that program. And then, well, hey, can you give me the phone number and email? And once I finally got a hold of somebody that's actually on the program, all I got was, yeah, we're still looking into that. That's all I can tell you. And I'm like, well, okay, well, now what do? Do I spend any more time at all on this, or do I just, you know, write it off as saying, well?
And so you're talking, yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to just jump on you there, but you're talking about the pain points that all of our clients have. And honestly, one of the most difficult things we deal with in the sales process is not that our product's not good enough; it's that people sometimes feel like it's too good to be true. They've had these similar experiences as you, Nate, and they're like, wait, I've made these calls and they shut me down. And so there's a high level of suspicion almost when we first start demoing and showing people our stuff. And then for the ones that really, you know, can almost separate their own, it's a very hard thing in life to separate your own personal experiences, because that does really dictate what our view on the world. And we see this all culturally, right? I mean, we're living in really interesting and wild time right now. And maybe some of the change is good. Maybe there's some other aspects of society that, you know, we'll see. It could be bad long term, but the point is, you know, it's really important that ultimately you're able to you know, get to the end customer. But we deal with that in the sales process, that people are highly, highly suspicious because of their own experiences, and they can't separate themselves from that. So what we do over here at Alphabrook is we actually come ready with a lot of work product and samples to show them actually what it looks like. And then what's interesting is once people become customers, they go from suspicion to like really surprised and amazed. And then the next stage after that is like advocates, where we get word of mouth and they become big believers. And we've got clients we've been working with for, you know, since we've been in business. And so we see a lot of BD folks that are, you know, quite suspicious about our ability to very quickly and seamlessly get that intel directly from the government end users, because in their own experiences, they find it really difficult. And I think I think the aspect of what we do that's hard for them to always understand is that we spent almost 10 years building the rapport and the communication partnerships with government. This is all also all we do. So we don't edit and write proposals. We can suggest people that would be great at doing that for you. We don't like set up teaming agreements. We're not doing a lot of the internal BD employee work that normal BD people would do or salespeople. And so since this is all we do, and we've made those concessions to government to forfeit our right to protest or bid, that really enables us to get better communication from government in a way that would just be very difficult for most contractors to replicate.
Now, do you get that intel directly just from government people, or what about, I mean, do you guys kind of contact, I guess I'm still trying to walk through. So yeah, there's a lot of information you can get from a government contractor, maybe the contracting agent, or maybe get a hold of the PM for that specific program. But what about actual intel into numbers, right? I mean, do you guys get into any of that intel of how many incumbents are on the contract and stuff like that? Or do you guys stick to the government side?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I think that we can even interview the government on their incumbent, their experience with their incumbent contractor. So there's actually nothing, especially since we're a non-interested party. The only really thing that the FAR, Federal Acquisition Regulations, the FAR calls out that you really shouldn't be asking for is like CPARS ratings. So what's interesting is really everything's fair game unless the government deems it, you know, CPARS related or, classified or something like that. We have quite a bit of latitude on what we can ask questions on. So like, for instance, we do a lot of research into incumbency performance. So how pleased is the government with their incumbent contractor? So what's funny is that if we said, what's the CPARS rating on the quality of deliverables for your contractor, if that's a 2 or just whatever numeric number it is, if that's a low score, they probably couldn't say a 1 or a 2, but they can talk qualitatively to us about how terrible the deliverables have been, how half of them have been late, the ones that are on time aren't compliant. You know, they can talk at length about that, and that's the type of stuff that we'll record and document. And the government's incentive for doing that, of course, is that they're hoping that they'll get a new solution. If they're unhappy in that situation, the scenario I just gave, they're hoping they'll get a contractor that can improve the quality of deliverables and,
sure,
it helps them get better solutions in the end.
And I'm assuming they're hoping that they're going to make you take copious notes to take back to whoever the next contract is going to be, right? To say, hey, this is really important to us. We're really tired of hearing, getting this Cedro A010 delivered, 3 weeks late every single month. So yeah, I would assume it's a win-win for them at all, completely.
No, yeah, it absolutely is. And that's why they communicate. Sometimes people say, why would the government communicate with you? And I'm like, why wouldn't they? We've built this huge ecosystem of contractors. We've reduced all the risk for them. We're helping them get better solutions. We don't just help the government when they're in a bad situation or a situation where they're less happy with their current contractor. We also help them when they are happy. So it's pretty interesting. Probably 7 out of 10 contracts we call on, the government wants to see improvement. Maybe half of those 70%, they want an entirely new vendor or contractor. But the other 30% that's not included in the 70% of unhappiness or dissatisfaction is a lot of happiness and a lot of satisfaction. Sometimes we'll call the government and they say, we love our incoming contractor. We've been working with them for 15 years. We go to each other's kids' birthday parties. They offer amazing technical talent. They offer amazing technical talent, and they actually don't want to lose their incumbent contractor. So if there's a pending or an upcoming recompete, you know what their big fear is, Nate? Their big fear is that someone's going to do a lowball bid, and they're going to actually lose this really trusted, valued contractor. So even in those situations, the government will tell us, hey, we're really happy, actually. We want a couple bids to keep the incumbent's pricing pencil sharp, but we don't want 50 bids if this is on a large vehicle. And so what we'll do is we'll go back to our client that gave us the research, and we'll say, hey, unless there's some strategic thing or you think you can somehow, pull a rabbit out of your hat, we probably don't want to bid this one, and here's why. Look at everything that they said about how happy they are, and then that gets back to the whole thing I was talking about the wrong deal. That's the wrong deal for a client to bid in most cases, because they're working, uphill significantly. They'll take all their BMP dollars for that, put that in a different basket where they're going to get a better return on their investment, pursue a different opportunity, basically.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's all part of the PWIN, right? I mean, it's really tough to unseat the incumbent if the government's happy with that incumbent. Now,
yeah.
I think it's also regional dependent too. So here in Colorado, just once again, this is not numbers, nothing like that. It's just my personal experience in the Colorado Springs area. I've noticed that any contractor that has, especially large big boy contractor, that has a contract for say 20 years, 20 to 25 years, their days are probably numbered, no matter how well the government likes them, just because their pricing is going to get too high, right? And that happens.
Sure.
And then you know, there's probably some other scenarios out there where the government's like, yeah, it just looks bad. I don't want to pick somebody new because on a very large contract, it's a pain, and you're going to lose a year's worth of work transitioning this, you know, $1 billion contract to a completely new contractor. But at some point, I get the feeling, I'm not the one to talk about my feelings too much, but I get that feeling as a BD guy that at sometimes they're like, man, we don't want to get a new contractor, but we kind of have to because otherwise, you know, it kind of looks bad too. Or, well, what's going on? Why does that company X keep winning that contract? It's been 25 years already. They've got to be way more expensive than everybody else. And I'm not saying that that's a guarantee, but once again, that's just Nate's feeling sometimes on some matters.
No, I think you're right. I think there's certainly some instances where the government probably doesn't move off a certain contractor quick enough, frankly. And sometimes I wonder if that's because they think that even though they're not getting the best support, the transition headaches would actually be worse than just sticking with mediocre, support. And, you know, just getting back to the whole 30%, I think that sometimes people just think of Alphabrook as a company that goes and finds problems and reports those back. But we also report a lot of the good things happening in government, that allow contractors to go try to offer solutions that, you know, can sort of leapfrog off those. Say, hey, you're already doing this really well. Do you know that the next stage in your development or your roadmap is to actually install this technology or develop this process map? If you're doing this well, then you're probably ready for X, Y, and Z. And so, you know, that's the fun part about our job. We do get to hear about a lot of the COEs, the centers of excellence, the COEs, and the success stories that are still informative for contractors, even though, you know, it's not, you know, maybe specific struggles or pain points that they'd want to try to capitalize on within a typical proposal.
Sure. So what type of contracts? I mean, so I'll give you an example. A lot of stuff that my company does, it's not R&D, it's more of the ANAS, so Advisory and Assistant Services. There's lots of different types of contracts out there. Is there any one particular that you guys help out with more than the others or less than the others or anything like that?
So I hate to say, like, you know, we focus on everything, but that's probably what I'm going to end up saying. Because we're working with almost 500 federal contractors at this point, and 70% of those are small business, we really cut across a lot of different domains and practice areas. I'd say probably 80% of all of our clients fall within the IT, and either 80% fall in either the IT and professional services or like pure play technology. So we are working with more and more tech companies, Google and we've worked with companies like AppDynamics, which sold for a few $1 billion a number of years ago, but right before IPOing. So we're working with companies that are software companies or manufacturer companies. In fact, we just wrapped up some research for HPE. They've got this, you know, really unique sort of mobile server that you can take and pick up and take. And it's like the different environments. Literally, it's sort of like a server that you can almost like in a suitcase bring with you. It's a really cool concept that they're developing, and it's totally on-premise, but has the portability of, you know, some of the things you think of with the cloud. And so we're working with these really innovative technology companies. But yeah, ANAS and really anything within the tech or IT and professional services space, you know, would fall squarely into the top 80% of the companies we work with. Then there's companies that do construction or like they build vessels. We had a client win a contract for like a port operations or vessel building services in Guantanamo Bay. So really, you know, we're doing research really all over government across multiple NAICS codes or practice areas. And then even OCONUS. So, you know, we're doing research on contracts and programs, you know, in Afghanistan or other places across the world where we're actually calling, you know, across time zones and interviewing people that are on these Air Force bases in the middle of nowhere, or at least that's how it feels to us, and, you know, getting the people on the ground's perspective on what's going on. But that's still really useful for those back here in, you know, in corporate, you know, BD offices trying to bid proposals. So it's pretty amazing when you think about it that we could, within just a couple business days, connect with someone halfway across the world, interview them, get feedback, and then report that back to a client that's here domestically, CONUS in the U.S., and then they could weave that into a proposal and submit it a week or two later and then win a deal. It's really fascinating just to see, you know, living in the 21st century is nothing quite like it, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I mean, things move at the speed of light right now. It's amazing how quickly things move, and especially the BD world too, right? I mean, people say it's a long game until you get to that RFP stage, and then all of a sudden, it's like there's not enough days, or enough hours in the day to get the job done. So,
and they always, and the government has an uncanny ability to release these things on Friday afternoon or right before a big holiday, right?
So, oh, yeah.
Like, we used to joke, you know, I used to work at do a lot of market intel at Booz Allen Hamilton and spearheaded a lot of what became their BDCOE eventually, and then subsequently worked at a small business. And I can't tell you how many weekends that we ended up working just because, you know, there'd be a week or two turn on some of these things and they'd release it on a Friday. And it's like you want to pull your hair out because you're like, oh, I can't even, you know, it's like a Saturday or your first few days working on the proposal are going to be weekend days. And it's always the best time of year too. There's a joke in federal contracting that when everyone else is sitting on the beach, you know, you're furiously typing behind a keyboard trying to get your proposal done on time. So there's some really great pros about being in federal contracting, and there's some maddening things too, I guess, that we can commiserate on a bit.
When I was trying to help write some large proposals as an engineer, I could tell you almost to the day. It was always, it would just push. You know, it was supposed to come out in July, then August, then all of a sudden, where is this thing? Oh, we're working the PWS deal, and then all of a sudden, the RFP drops, like, the day after Thanksgiving on Friday, and so you got two holidays in there. If you happen to have 45 days to do one of these large proposals, typically they'll do 30, but if you happen to get 45, now you've got two more holidays over top of that, which I'm telling you from experience really makes the wives really happy, or the significant other. Like, why are you on the weekend? Why are you in there? And then of course you got your own personal things, right? You got the proposal manager saying, hey, I need to get this done. Tells you on Friday afternoon, I need the whole team to come in this weekend, and I need you guys to write sections X, Y, Z, and have it ready for us on Monday. And then you're like, well, where are you going? Well, I've got vacation planned for this weekend. I'm like, well, what are you? I thought you were the proposal manager. What's going on? And I'm like, well, yeah, but we just organize everything. And then they'll come in Monday morning after you just spent literally 16-hour days Saturday and Sunday. And it never failed. It was the bring me the rock syndrome. You'd show them, this isn't what I wanted. You know what? Next time you can come in the weekend with us and tell us what you want because that's what you got. But you're right.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's difficult.
Yeah, it's very difficult. And then you compile these things on top of each other. So I like the concept that you guys have is just trying to help provide that intel. It's just one less thing that you're going to have to worry about.
In a perfect world, everybody would wake up and know exactly which deals they should pursue and which ones they shouldn't pursue. And so obviously we don't live in a perfect world, but we're trying to help you get closer to that level of certainty. And what better way than to get the customer perspective? It's funny that you talk about maybe people not always being, you know, as committed as you or whatever. I'm really thankful. I mean, a lot of the work experiences I've had, I know some of the small businesses I worked at and even at Booz Allen and some other places that, you know, the proposal folks that were good, you know, would burn the midnight oil and work through the weekend. But I think that just us talking about the difficulty of just bidding a deal, because, like, I think people even outside the federal environment, they'll be like, oh, it's a proposal. What is that, like 3 or 4 pages? And you're like, no, buddy, it's like 50 pages. And it's like, it's got to be perfectly compliant, getting back to that conversation we had. And so that's just
hard
underscores the point. Like, you, yes, and sometimes it's sealed. And so, you know, you're printing and stuff. And that's where I have memories in my past of really fantastic proposal managers and writers that did work weekends. It would be at the printer, you know, printers printing things out. And, you know, it's like I had so much admiration and respect for those people, and I wasn't always there all throughout every weekend. And so, you know, just being in the federal contracting industry, you got to be tough. You got to be able to think on your feet. You got to be able to create things quickly, especially from a proposal standpoint. But back to the point, it's like, you know, you don't ever want to bid a deal if you don't have to. And if you bid 10 deals and win 5, you know, that's 50%. But most people aren't having that type of D win. You know,
that's pretty good.
Most people are bidding 10. Every 10, they're winning 1 or 2. And so if there was a way to cut out 3 or 4 of those, if you could bid 6 or 7 and win 1 or 2, not only are you saving a ton of money, you're also just saving your employee morale, you're enriching your personal life, and you're taking that time you would have spent on the wasteful deals and putting that towards deals that, you know, maybe you do have a better chance of winning. And I think getting back to what we like to do, we do hear stories. I've had CEOs of our clients call me and say, you know, we were going to spend 2 weeks working through the weekends working on this, but we just read how in love the government is with the current incumbent, and we've got other deals we think are the incumbent's more vulnerable. You know, we're going to enjoy ourselves, and we're still working hard, but we're not going to kill ourselves on this one. We're going to pass because we just don't think there's enough juice to justify the squeeze, if you will. So I like to think that our solution doesn't just help government. It also brings certainty and comfort and maybe even some, you know, more pleasure in their personal lives on the weekends, being able to rest a little easier knowing you're connected to the customer's thoughts and feelings.
No, I fully agree. So Matt, talk to me about, so you guys are based out of Washington, D.C. area. I'm based in Colorado. Talk to me about sure. Colorado. Do you guys do anything out here in Colorado? Have you yet or?
So yeah, we do a lot of research all across the country. Obviously Colorado is a lot of spending going on there. You've got multiple Air Force bases. You've got, you know, the Air Force Academy, if I'm correct, right? I don't think I'm mistaken about
no,
that.
No, that's correct.
Locally, you've got Buckley Air Force Base in Aurora.
Peterson, Schriever, Cheyenne Mountain. Yeah, we've got
Peterson,
all of them.
Peterson, Schriever, Cheyenne. And then you got the Army bases. You got Fort Carson.
Yep.
You got the chemical depot.
Yep,
there,
Purple Chemical Depot here, yep.
So you got a lot of stuff there. And so we do a ton of research there. I would say that we've got a handful of clients in Colorado Springs, actually small business contractors. I won't mention them by name just out of respect. A lot of our clients sign up and sort of want a certain level of privacy and anonymity.
Sure.
I think just knowing other companies, knowing that they use us for market intel would let other companies know they're even more sophisticated than they might be assuming is how I'll put it. But even for companies that we work with that aren't located in Colorado Springs, since so much spending passes through there from an Air Force Army standpoint, you know, we're doing a lot of research for opportunities that come through there, that the place of performance is there, or the procurement or contracting office, or the end customer is there, even though our client may be, you know, in Florida or San Antonio or wherever.
Sure. Now, when you, let's say, I got my company to come on board. You went after a contract. Like you said, there's lots of companies that are going after things. Do you guys double up on the intel, or do you only give that intel to one company that's let's say you had two clients that are going after the same contract. Do you guys give the intel
sure.
to the same, or how does that work?
So I'm glad you're asking about this. This is probably one of the best unique differentiators of our solution. It's why a lot of people choose to work with us. So unlike the BD databases where everybody sees everything and it's sort of basic data, it's not giving you the real customer detail. It doesn't tell you who's going to be on the eval panel. It doesn't give you their direct verbal feedback. You know, we go really deep, but we're also, when we do a report for someone, you know, we're doing that specifically for one company. So we have never said though, now here's what we don't do though. We don't say if we research a topic, we'll never research that topic again. That wouldn't be fair to us or the new customers we're adding. It would limit our growth and
sure.
it would over time reduce the amount of research topics we could research. So we don't say that. But what we do say is whatever we do for you, whatever report we produce, you know, we're creating that and then delivering that exclusively to you. We're not putting that on a platform for masses, for multiple companies to see. At least through our customized subscription, that's how we're doing it, which is all we're doing right now. And so that's a real advantage. That gives you a real significant competitive advantage. If to your question, if two companies within a similar period of time submit something for the same topic or same opportunity, we're just going to do separate interviews. We're going to give different research teams internally, you know, those two different topics, and they're going to call the government and then do separate interviews. And then whatever is being extracted or obtained through those interviews is going to make its way into those separate reports. And then we're going to deliver those, of course, separately to each customer. But the reality is we're never getting, you know, the way our topics work is someone chooses a topic. So a topic could be an RFP or an opportunity. And then they ask, you know, they're going to ask multiple questions related to that topic. And we actually give our clients the control. They get to choose what we research as the subtopic related to the primary topics, Nate.
Sure.
So it would be very rare, because we're so customized and tailored, it would be very rare for two companies, same opportunity, same exact second or day, and then they would also uniquely have to choose the exact same subtopics. That's actually never happened before. So that actually helps keep it distinctive and customized for each individual individual client. Like, for instance, there might be one small business that's looking to team, that's looking to subcontract on an opportunity, and they're wondering who the key primes are and what the government's thinking about the incumbent. And then there might be, you know, there might be a company that either is the incumbent or is a prime bidder and is thinking about things differently from their perspective. And so the research really is going to vary depending on the request and which company is having us research what, even if it's about a similar topic at a similar point in time.
Okay. No, I mean, that's good to know. You know, from a potential customer, you know, just speaking from a potential customer here, that's just good information to know. Know that when I come to you and hire you, you're building that report for me, right? I mean, that's kind of key. Now, when you're out there doing these interviews with the government, do you guys tell the government who you're doing the research for, or does the government ever ask, or is that just kind of kept silent?
Back to your exclusivity question, one of the things we're really proud about is that nobody else really offers that. So if you look at most of the solutions in the market, whether they're consultants that work with multiple companies in a specialized agency or area, or the BD databases, they're all sort of providing a lot of the same information to multiple clients. So we take a ton of pride in the fact that when we do a report, that's exclusive and customized for each individual client. And we think that creates greater value with our solution. It gives you a competitive advantage and that you can draft a proposal with some unique feedback that you can trust that nobody else or very few people would have. The only way someone else would have that exact intel or similar intel is if, you know, they were a client and we had done similar interviews, which is, you know, we work with a lot of companies, but we're not working with thousands yet, right?
Sure.
Regarding your question about anonymity, one of the things the government has actually requested is that when we call, we just call it AlphaBrook. This also provides protections for the government. It's nice for our clients too. So I'll talk about it from the government side and from our client side. From the government side, they like being able to say, listen, we're just talking directly with AlphaBrook. We're having a conversation with a non-interested party. There's nonprofits out there that do statistical analysis too that the government will share more info with than a contractor because they're using that, you know, research from a statistical standpoint to draw conclusions, which then ultimately benefit government. So I think we sort of fit into that genre, if you will. We're not a nonprofit, but we're not using this information to immediately bid and win a deal for ourselves. But the government does like to know that they're talking with us. There's no other contractor or client on the phone, and that they can just trust that, you know, this information, you know, it's a one-way conversation. Now, they don't try to control what happens in the secondary market. So what the government cares a lot about is that they're communicating directly with a non-interested party. They understand that that information can be reported on, can be chopped on, can be relayed, can be shared, and that's sort of what we do through our solution. From our client standpoint, what's really nice is that they can ask some pretty, you know, pointed, tough questions for us to interview the government on without actually mixing in their brand, and that can be a nice thing. We have probably about 20 to 25% of all the research we do, Nate, is for actual incumbent contracts, so our clients are using our solution to position and really survey their customer for their own upcoming recompete.
Oh, wow.
And so that anonymity really benefits them as well, where we can call the government as AlphaBrook, have a direct conversation, and, you know, then they can still get really great intel for their upcoming recompete. The government understands that once they release information, it's going to have a trickle effect. It's going to have waves. It's going to get reshaped and repurposed. But what the government has told us that they care a lot about is that direct communication with us. You know, it's important that we're not a contractor and that there's no other contractors involved, because that keeps them in compliance and with the FAR from a sharing standpoint. And so we of course honor that. We never mention our clients' names when we call the government. We're not marketing companies. We're just pulling information. But our clients have told us, you know, they see that as beneficial too, because they can sort of stay a little bit detached from the whole interview process, which, you know, behooves them in many instances.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. You know, that's now. Well, I guess, you know, I'm looking at the time here. This is going to be a long episode, but that's just because I'm very intrigued on some of this information. Probably because I live
maybe I've been long-winded.
Every day. No. I've asked a lot of questions too. But like I said, I live this every single day. So there's lots of questions out there, and maybe we'll have to do a round two someday. But I'll tell you one of the last questions I had. So one of the things that I run into a lot, and I don't know if you guys do the research on that end or not, but kind of like a internet scrub, if you will, is what I'm, you know, one of the things I've always thought would be beneficial. For example, if I was going to research this contract and I have no current capabilities in that field, but I feel that my capabilities are that the company's capabilities are definitely capable of doing the job. But just to try to start out by, well, who is the incumbent, right? And who's currently working it? And, you know, like a LinkedIn scrub machine that will go in and produce a visual map of what does the current contract look like, right? Who's the government PM? Who's the the main engineers? Who's your primary people that the government can't lose? And do you get into any of the personnel stuff?
So we definitely do. We would call that like open source intel. Obviously, what's really exciting, and what we value and really focus our solution on is the government verbal quote, the voice of government, all of that, and that's going directly to the government and doing the interviews. But we do support that. Like if the government says this is who's doing the work for me, here's how many people they have, you know, here's their subcontractor. We then do go to open source sources, whether that's LinkedIn or whether that's, you know, people's own web pages, or there's a lot out there, surprisingly. I mean, Google only gets more and more powerful from a search results standpoint every day.
Yeah.
And so what we do like to do is there's qualitative, there's quantitative. So the qualitative, the verbal, the softer, the conversation, sure, some of it's subjective, but that subjective stuff can make a big difference because it gets to the heart of how the government's thinking and feeling. But we do like to meld or pair that with the quantitative, or sort of the factuals, what we say, not that what the government say is not factual, but you know what I mean, that open source information that's out there on the web that's sort of been reported, it's on a web page somewhere, and sort of join those together to create a full story and a full picture. And what makes us feel really confident is when the government says a bunch of things to us, and then we see, you know, we see things objectively on the open source intel we go, but again, on the web or the internet, that really matches well. That gives us a higher level of confidence. And we do. That's included in our report. So I don't know if there's a tool out there that can automatically scrub everything perfectly, but we're doing a lot of that, through our research analysts. And we've had people say, you're like human intelligence for BD. And I always take that as a compliment because they're saying, you know, you're going and getting all the open source stuff, but you're still working in and your primary emphasis is this human intelligence. And so it's important for you and, of course, you know, your audience to know that we join those two aspects together. So within a report that we provide, it would have a lot of quotes from the end customer. It's also going to have a narrative included talking about, you know, how this is confirmed or how maybe what they said is us could be questioned based off other information that's in the open source, you know, forums.
Well, and the reason why I ask that question is because, just like you just got on saying, it's essentially it's not any one thing that'll win you that contract. It's the knowledge of everything combined. What does the customer want? Are they happy? What is their pain points? What is going well? What's more important, pricing, or is it technical, that technical solution? But at the same time, it's also, like you said, you can on the open source stuff, you can find out what's going on, right? You can find out, oh, well, hold on a second. We just had like 20 people resign in the past 6 months. You know, there's something going on there too. You can pull a lot of information from that open source stuff. But I think it's all combined together.
Yeah, and we have situations. I love that you just mentioned that as a scenario, because we've had situations where the government has said, we're having major personnel issues, and we'll say, well, could you tell us more? And they'll say, yeah, there's a lot of retention issues, and you know, the contractor hasn't been able to keep their people in place. And now, by the way, the client we're doing this for, when they're reading this, is probably licking their chops, like, oh great, there's some real problems that we could
solve. Exactly. Well, it goes both ways too, right? Because obviously typically I've never once had a government person tell me come out and say that it matters whose butt is in that seat, right? It's not a butt and seat contract, so it's just by the requirements. But I guarantee you, having worked on the government side too, that it most definitely is a pain point for them, to where if they brought somebody new in and the incumbent lost and the new company says, we're going to fire every person here, maybe it's 50 people, the government's going to have a problem with that, right? I mean, I guarantee that, because those people have been there for 10, 15 years, and just badge flipping every 3 to 5 years, that's going to be a big deal. So you want to make sure that you kind of balance all that too. And now, obviously, I don't know a single contractor that would do that. That's kind of like digging their own grave if they did that. But it's a possibility, right? Because per the rules, it is all about requirements. It's not about who's doing the requirements. It's about the requirement itself.
And you're exactly right. And I wanted to affirm your point that sometimes when the government talks about personnel issues, we then go find and we're like, oh, look, on LinkedIn or wherever, wow, this company has lost 10 people. They've moved on. And so when that stuff checks out, it's like, okay, this isn't just like one government person that's got got some frustration or wants to sabotage anyone. This is actually legitimate because look, they said this and then this matches out. So yeah, it's a really good point that you mentioned. And one other point I'd be remiss if I just didn't share is that we also do a lot of we use open source methods to gather opportunities. So we track, included in our subscription, we've only really been talking about the deep dive research that we do for like very customized, tailored topics that our clients request. One other thing that we do, and I don't know if this was shared with you by Dennis, because he's the one I did the original demo with when he was interested himself. But we go out and we look across like 3 or 4 dozen different opportunity sources. So we track multiple GSA schedules, multiple GWACs, many of the BIC, the best in class vehicles. We track agency forecasts. We track multiple BD databases. We're tracking everything we can track. And then we provide a tailored report on a recurring basis for our clients. So we actually use our open source skills. And some of that stuff's access driven, where it's not even open source, but we have access where we're going to go find opportunities. And then we send a report of key opportunities that are coming out in the upcoming months that, many of our clients wouldn't have the visibility to see, or just wouldn't have, if they're heads down working on a proposal, they wouldn't have had the time to actually go find that stuff. So we are actually doing two things through our subscription: the deep dive research, the voice of government, that market intel extraction verbally. And then we're also helping people build pipeline reports, where that's where we're scanning, between, 30 and 40 different opportunity sources out there to make sure our small business clients aren't missing key opportunities. Because let's face it, small businesses have a lot less resources. They're wearing more hats. They don't have full teams out there looking for opportunities for them. So we sort of fill that gap for them as well. Those are the two key things we do through our subscription.
Excellent. Well, Matt, we are coming up on the hour here, so why don't you tell everybody how they can get in touch with you? What's your website and whatever else you want to give us?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Nate. So the best way to just learn about us online is alphabrook.com. That's www.alphabrook.com. And there's a video, there's a playful video on our website. We sort of have a fun, playful website. You can submit your information if you want to get your own demo where we go through even more details. There's a number on our website where you could call us and, you'd be greeted by one of our warm sales associates or whoever answers the phone and get you set up for a demo. That's probably the best way. We've got a lot of great blog posts, too, which are available on our website. And so I think there's multiple different avenues for people. And these days people like to read and go, scope out things before they commit to spending their personal time. And we respect that. So we've tried to make our website as available and informative as possible. So that should be a good place to start.
Excellent. So alphabrook.com. Oh, go ahead.
Yep. And my personal email is really simple. It's just Matt, M-A-T-T, at alphabrook.com. And so I would love to meet people. Very social guy, clearly. That's why I wanted to do this as well. Really enjoy talking with people, learning from their experiences. So just feel free to shoot me an email, Matt, M-A-T-T, at alphabrook.com. And, would love to at least have a dialogue and just make new connections, even if people aren't able to sign up for our solution.
Well, excellent. Well, Matt, I appreciate you coming on the show today, this week. I've learned a lot. I'll probably be in contact with you later because I still have lots more questions. Just because I find this very interesting. And like I said, it's what I do every day. So, knowledge is power. And it sounds like that's exactly what Alphabrook offers you as a contractor, is that knowledge and intel that could take you too much time to do on your own. So for those listeners out there that need some help, or you know what, just go out and do the demo at least, see what you guys have to offer. And contact Alphabrook, and we'll if you have any other questions for the smalls, you can always contact the smalls at smallscolorado@thesmalls.org. And we are always in the point of trying to help one another and small businesses. So if you guys can't get a hold of Matt and his team, or just forgot what it is, you can always contact us and we'll we'll pass you guys through to Matt and his team too. So with that, Matt, I do want to say thanks again, and we will be in touch again another time, okay?
Okay, hey, thanks so much, Nate, and also to Dennis. It's been a lot of fun, and I love what you all are doing with the Smalls. I think it's a great service and benefit to small government contractors all over. So thank you so much for inviting me, and I look forward to continuing the discussion. So have a great day.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Matt. And for the listeners out there, stay tuned next week for our next episode of the Smalls.
Thanks for listening.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Smalls Podcast. Connect with us at thesmalls.org. Don't forget to sign up to our newsletter to receive our free materials. See you soon at the next episode.